Welcome to this week's Mentor Moment. Every incredible founder needs a great mentor, and every single weekend I give you a brand new one. Your mentor this week is David Hartigan, the CEO of Hemp Heroes. Today he teaches us how to know when the right time is to quit your main job and double down on your startup.
If you've been listening for a while, you know Iconic Offices have been my partner for ages now. Working and recording out of their flexible workspaces has meant a huge deal to the success of this podcast. So it made perfect sense to partner up with them again for season 17, but to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, a unique offer. Come work in the Iconic Office workspaces for free with no catches. Simply visit the link in the description below and enter Gary24 for a free day pass or a free day office pass. Enjoy.
Are you an early stage founder solving problems in the food supply chain? The Green Man Group sees the value in your work and has launched the Growing Further Awards to back your vision. These awards are designed to promote startups that are driving sustainability and innovation in key areas of the food supply chain, including production, distribution and retail, built environment, and customer engagement. Enter at growingfurther.io for a shot at a share of the €100,000 cash prize and the chance to pitch your company to a crowd of industry leaders. Don't miss out. The deadline for entries is October 4th, with final judging and the awards set for January 2025. Learn more and apply at growingfurther.io.
How did you know the time was now?
Yeah, so actually a number of kind of things happened. So I started the business with a co-founder, John, and then John kind of, through I suppose a number of different circumstances, he kind of made the decision that he didn't want to be part of the business anymore. He was looking at new business ventures, and he'd only actually had his first child as well. So I suppose his life had changed. And then it kind of came down to me of like, okay, look, do I want to take over the business? Do we close the business? Kind of what happens next? So I kind of decided that, I suppose, the business is nearly like my first child in a sense. So I was like, look, I'm not ready to give up the business. I think it still has massive growth potential.
What were you doing at this stage? Were you doing reasonable figures? Were you able to support yourself?
Yeah, we were doing reasonable enough figures. Like, the business was doing well, but like it wasn't doing as well as kind of it needed to be. And it kind of needed someone full time in the business to drive it.
So you were both kind of chipping away at it.
Yeah, we were both kind of chipping away. But it wasn't like it wasn't John's number one priority. It wasn't my number one priority. Like we both were kind of busy. And then he kind of made the decision, look, I don't really want to do this any longer. I'm looking at other things. So I made the decision to buy John out then. So I took a massive loan, bought John. So it was a 50-50 split. I acquired the whole business then. And then I think for another 8 months, I was actually working in PwC while running the business.
So you're trying to pay back that loan?
Trying to pay back the loan, yeah, exactly, yeah. And then luckily I'd gotten promoted then to manager. So I was on a nice salary, got a nice bonus. And it was difficult because I'd only gotten promoted again just before I handed my notice and gotten another bonus. And a few people definitely looked at me like, are you fucking mad? Like, what are you doing? You're leaving like an 80 grand a year plus job, yeah. Like that has everything you need. You've career progression, like if you want
everything
to get
you need
a
for some people,
yeah, for some people, yeah. Like if I wanted to get a mortgage, it wouldn't have been the most difficult thing in the world. Like I was a nice track record, had good income coming in, and it definitely wouldn't have been easy, but like would have been a lot easier than it is now.
And did you ever think oh, do you know what, I'll just stick around?
No, definitely not. No, like I always knew like my ultimate goal was to leave. And
I knew that was the answer.
Yeah, I kind of stayed even longer than I expected. And I think it was just because I got comfortable to an extent. And I was just progressing nicely. Obviously, the money was good. So then, yeah.
Well, when you're good at something, even if you're not mad about it, you kind of tend to keep doing it because you're like, it's like Pavlov's dog.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the bell rings and you're like, I'm good at this. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
You kind of get rewarded and you're like, oh, it's okay.
So yeah, so I bought John out and then kind of worked in the business for another couple of months. And then in September of last year, I made the decision. I was like, right, it's now or never. I'm either going to run full tilt at the business or it's just going to keep tipping along and I'm going to get tired of it. And also at that point, I was kind of coming to the breaking point of I can't keep splitting my time between the two. Like it was just getting chaotic. Like I was run down. I was constantly sick and had no social life.
It rarely works.
Yeah,
I think it's a great idea for what you did. I think it's a great idea to prove an idea.
Yeah,
I think that's really smart. If you can prove an idea while having an income, I think that's really clever.
Yeah.
But I've very rarely come across entrepreneurs who've been able to juggle both.
Both long term.
It's kind of like that phrase, you can't be a little bit pregnant.
Yeah.
You either are or you aren't. And I think this with entrepreneurship, there comes a point where you have to decide.
Yeah. So I made the decision then in September of last year. So went in, spoke to the partners, was like, look, I'm going to leave. And they were kind of like, oh, right, we've just promoted it. And like, you're doing really good. Are you sure? I was like, yeah, look, I've started this business. It's growing. I want to give it a good go. So I've made the decision. I'm going to leave. They were like, okay, look, fair enough. Best of luck with you. And then, yeah, from September till now, geez, the business has just grown exponentially. Like, I've been able to give it full time, I suppose, priority. So, like, for example, like, even our pets range, because we've kind of four main segments, because we've over 25 different products. And we went, originally, if I go back to being a white label product where we had no manufacturing.
What does white label mean?
White label is basically, you've, like, a lot of products actually in the market are white label, and they're like, or private label is another word. So what that is a company will manufacture it for you, put your stamp on it, and give it to you. And essentially then that's your product.
So you're a marketing company.
Yeah, you're basically a marketing company, yeah. So the interesting thing in the CBD and hemp space is that 90% of CBD products in Europe are white label.
90%?
90%, yeah. So if you see a brand on the shelf, you can be nearly guaranteed that they don't manufacture their own products.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must be unusual across most industries. Is that very high?
It would be very high in the hemp and CBD space, because the amount of money and investment needed to actually enter the industry and manufacture is quite high.
Right.
So that would be kind of unusual. Some industries probably be similar enough. I imagine clothing. Like, there's probably just massive big clothing companies who do clothing for everyone.
And food and drink, I suppose. Exactly. That's kind of a normal one. Yeah. Okay.
So because we'd reinvested all the money, we'd develop our own manufacturing. So now we have manufacturing in-house. We've 25 different products across kind of four main kind of categories. So we've like, we've human products, cosmetics, superfoods, and then pets. So like, to give you an idea, from September till now, I think we had, in September time, we only had about 10 pet stores stock our products. And we've over 65 now who stock it. So that'll just show you the amount of extra effort I was able to put in, and go out and speak to stores, show them the products, essentially sell them on the benefits.
Mm. When you say manufacturing in-house, is that not wildly expensive?
Well, that's where the first 4 years of revenue went, yeah. So right. It went over 100 grand went in, yeah.
Right, so that was always your plan, was to take it in-house. Why?
I always knew we were going to play a long-term role in the industry. We needed to have control over our manufacturing, because if you didn't, you were nearly at the mercy of whoever was white labeling for you, where if they say, hey, that's 20 euro now, but next week it's 30, otherwise go elsewhere, well, you're kind of screwed. So I always wanted to have that control. Plus, I wanted to kind of increase our quality and be able to really stand over the products, that the book really stops at us. Like, we can't say, oh yeah, sorry about that, that product was made X, Y, and Z. Yeah.
No one cares. It's not our fault. Because no one cares. Your name is on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't give a shit who made it.
Yeah.
It's you that I bought it off.
Yeah.
So CBD is kind of one of those industries whereby there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there's a massive misconception.
Oh,
yeah.
Is that legal? You're like, yeah. I've been taking CBD. I've been a CBD advocate since actually training in SBG. Because back then, you're so sore.
Yeah.
you're looking for absolutely everything. Anything. Epsom salt baths, rubs, drinks, anything I could get to like take down the swelling and the soreness. And CBD was one of those first things I took, because it just really helped my sleep.
Yeah. Sleep is huge. Yeah, like I wear the Whoop, I think.
Yeah,
Whoop
same. As well, yeah. Yeah, well, this hand even.
Yeah. and Whoop is cool, because it's, well, I've worn a couple of different, I suppose, wearables, but Whoop are actually one of the only ones that ask you how much CBD you take as part of your sleep diary. And like, we've so many people use it for sleep, like that'd probably be 50% of our customer base.
Yeah, no, I found it really good and I found it really beneficial. And when I started taking it, it was really hard to get.
Yeah.
There was only the shop in Capel Street could get it. I couldn't get it anywhere else in Dublin. Couldn't really get it online some places, but then I didn't know what the quality was. Exactly. Like you said, I was like looking at all these places going, that looks a bit bogey.
And you see, that's the thing as well. Like, the quality is a big part of it. So like, CBD comes from hemp, right? And one of the biggest misconceptions is everyone's like, oh, is that cannabis? Yeah. Well, technically you're actually correct, because cannabis is a family of plants, which includes hemp on one side and then basically marijuana on the other. Now, the only difference is hemp is basically like your non-alcoholic cousin. Where the THC level, so THC is the actual cannabinoid which gets you high, the THC in hemp is less than 0.2 or 0.3%. So it's essentially like a minute trace. It's barely there. It's one of them things where it's always going to be there genetically in the plant, unless you genetically modified it out. But marijuana on the other side is like 20-30% THC. So you're talking, the difference is like 100 to 150 times.
Mm.
So that's why it's completely non-intoxicating, and it's more of kind of, I suppose, an industrial crop.
Mm. And hemp has been used for thousands of years. Well, we don't really understand that.
Yeah, hemp is a fascinating history. And like that was one of the things that drew me to it, because when I learned about it on the CBD side, then I was like, okay, how is this stuff made? And I was like, okay, hemp. I was like, I've heard of hemp clothing. That's pretty much it, or hemp foods. And then when I looked at it, I was like, oh my God, this is probably one of the first crops to be grown at scale by like mankind.
Yeah.
Like it goes back to Egyptian times. Like there's a really cool thing to look into. It's called Hemp for Victory. So like during World War II, they actually encouraged farmers in the US to grow hemp with to help with the war effort, because they were using the fibers for like basically like parachutes, military clothing,
no ropes. Way.
Yeah, it's fascinating. They actually like were giving farmers money to grow hemp to help during World War II. Like
that's amazing.
Yeah. And then like that's just completely lost history. Like it's fascinating in terms of like how it's been used through centuries.
It's funny how things come in and out of style, come in and out of fashion, and yeah. get misinterpreted and then kind of like, get associated to this one thing, where in reality it's like a super plant.
Oh yeah, like if we found this on Mars, we'd be like, Jesus Christ, it's the best thing we've ever found.
Revolutionary new yeah. product coming to the market.
And like, it literally can make thousands of products. Like you're talking from like bioplastics, so like a lot of new BMWs, the actual consoles will have a small portion of hemp in them. So it makes a fantastic bioplastic building materials. You can make a thing called hempcrete, which is basically like a concrete block made from hemp. Foods, textiles, you name it. Like there's pretty much very little you can't make from hemp.
If you enjoyed that, go back and listen to the full episode, or you can just click the link in the description below.